Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. I'm Mark LeVonier. In this hour, old-time radio crime. Later on, it's Dark Venture from 1946. But right now, it's the crime-fighting serial Lady in Blue. I'll be bringing you the first two broadcasts of this NBC series in this hour. Part one next, from April of 1951, the story called The Bachelor's Club.
Lady in Blue.
The Lady in Blue. The Lady in Blue is known to the world of crime as a feared and hated criminologist and is known to criminals by only that name, the Lady in Blue. A young woman never seen except in a blue dress, wearing fabulous blue sapphires, and always a blue mask covering the upper portion of her face. She has a maid and factotum in the person of Harriet Higgins, who is probably the only living soul on earth who knows the true identity of the Lady in Blue. Could we see her now, we might find out a little more about her. For she's in her luxurious apartment on the topmost floor of a centrally located downtown office building, dressing for a social evening at a nearby country club as her real but unknown self. The only reminder of the Lady in Blue is the occasional drone of police calls on the radio.
1723 Downing Road. 1723 Downing Road. Keep the peace. Calling Sheriff's Car 21. Sheriff's Car 21. Investigate a disturbance at the Blackbird Inn.
I wish you'd let me turn in, Bobby, for me.
Inn on
like as not, if I don't, you'll never get dressed in time.
I am your burden of misery, aren't I, Harriet?
Not now, Your Highness, miss. It's only when you wear blue as you worries me.
Well, I hope I won't worry you tonight. I'm only planning a little dancing at the country club, without any sleuthing.
I hope as how it stays a evening without sleuthing, miss. That is what there is left of the evening.
Why, it's not late yet.
It's half to 10, and to my thought, 10 o'clock's no proper time for my young lady to be starting out of a night. It's more like time to go to bed.
Doesn't anything I do meet with your approval?
Oh, there it is again. Tis a wonder to me the valves held out. All the work they get. And is it music we hear? It is not. Nor is it news. All it is them bobbies, night and day.
The police are much more important to us than you. In our business, we must know what they know, and a good many things they don't know. Powder my back, will you, Higgins?
Yes, miss. Oh, what good is that wireless going when you're not listening, miss? Now, take that bloke as was just talking. I'd say you didn't hear half of what he said.
You mean that last cancellation on broadcast 42? I heard it well enough to know that it was about the same hit-and-run driver that was broadcast as wanted at 6:23 this evening.
Oh, Lummy, I give over, miss. You'd hear that wireless if there was a pack of fishmongers in here all screaming at once.
Not quite that. But in our business, it does pay to notice everything you see and hear.
It ain't my business, miss, except when I'm looking after you. What will you be wearing with that gold dress?
Only the amber necklace.
No blue at all, then?
No blue at all. Tonight there is no lady in blue. Only myself.
I hope you have a grand time. It's not often that you get...
Quiet, Harriet.
Calling Lieutenant Greer.
Quiet. This is important.
How can you tell me?
That call was a robbery on Tower Drive. Tower Drive is always important. Besides, they sent two prowl cars and Jerry Greer, which makes it front page crime.
It was only a robbery, miss. I didn't hear any newspaper news.
You will in a minute. And don't talk through it this time.
How can I help it? The way it talks all the time.
Here it is. Say nothing.
Lieutenant Greer in cars 1-6 and 1-7. Further information on your call.
Oh, more of the same.
Quiet.
Make it fast. This robbery was committed within the last few minutes. Description of car, getaway car, occupants unknown. Dark blue limousine. White sidewall tires. Headed south on Tower Drive. You should meet this car before it gets out of the canyon. Roll on, boys. Kelly.
Higgins, get a blue evening dress.
Too blue? And you said there ain't no lady in blue tonight. What about the country club?
This is really much more interesting. Hurry with that dress.
I'm getting it, miss.
And my sapphires.
Yes, I know. And the blue mask. Oh, why must you do this, miss?
Because I'm the lady in blue.
I thought the lady in blue had no doings with robbery.
I don't ordinarily. But number 12 Tower Drive is both interesting and important.
What's there to number 12 as makes it so different?
That's the address of the Bachelor's Club. Rich man's apartment. Oh, its tenants average a casual million or so apiece. And the social register's a copy of its guest list.
Bachelor's Club, did you say, miss?
Yes, Higgins. A novel written about number 12 Tower Drive could be called Bachelor's All.
That makes it not a proper place for a young lady to be going at this time of the night.
And how many cases would be solved by the lady in blue if she went only to the proper places?
Here's one mystery as you might solve, miss. And that's why there ain't no steady gentleman trying to court the lady in blue.
I'm afraid I don't give them time. Hurry now. Give me a mask and get into your dark gray dress.
I ain't expecting no caller, miss.
Really? Now, Higgins, you know you're coming with me.
Oh, blimey. Do I have to play detective again, miss?
Naturally. You wouldn't have me go to the Bachelor's Club unchaperoned at this improper time of night, would you, Dr. Watson?
I ain't no doctor, and me name's Harriet Higgins.
In spite of that handicap, you'll play Watson to my Sherlock Holmes. Now run along and change. I'll answer the phone.
But it ain't wrong, miss.
No, but it will.
And that's what you get for being the best private detective there is. Lieutenant Greer won't like you being there, miss.
I'm very sorry for Lieutenant Greer, but he isn't in charge of my work.
No, miss. But he is in charge of this robbery, and he told you not to meddle again at a crime as he was investigating without you was called in by the people as had been done by the criminal as he was investigating.
Excellent, my dear Watson.
JMPD.
Now put your veil in the pocket of that warm overcoat.
Oh, I'll be warm enough,
miss. Cars 16
Listen.
And 17.
What is it?
Be quiet.
And Lieutenant Greer, robbery getaway car was seen well away from Tower Drive. Do not attempt to follow it. Proceed at once to 12 Tower Drive. Another robbery has been reported at this address.
Lummy, another robbery?
And a 12 Tower Drive.
The sign place, miss?
Yes. Hurry.
But we ain't even been called yet, miss.
We will be, Watson. Put on your veil and fasten my mask.
Originating KMPD.
Must I do it now, miss?
You're looking for a dark
blue. Beat me how you love to hide your pretty eyes with that blue thing.
My eyes have accomplished more behind this mask than they ever will without it.
As to that, I have me doubts, miss. Now take that there big doorman in the uniform down at the Regal Hotel. Harriet, he says to me, Harriet, you got eyes as big as bathtubs, says he, and they rolls like tumbleweeds, he says. He used to be a cowboy in Nevada, and that's how he knows about them things. Sometimes he says... Oh, how can I answer the telephone with me nose all tangled up in this here fishnet? Be like trying to use it through a affectionate screen door.
I'll get it.
I'm sorry, miss.
Never mind. Take the extension and listen in.
Yes, miss.
Hello? Yes, speaking. Mr. Arnold Tremaine of 12 Tower Drive? Oh, yes, Mr. Tremaine. My fee? It will be in proportion to my efficiency, which is considered rather above average. What was the amount of your loss? Insured? No? I see. I'll be there in about 10 minutes. No, thank you, Mr. Tremaine. My assistant will drive me.
Lummy, $50,000. How much is that in pounds, miss?
Oh, it's about 10,000. Quite a sum, Nespa.
My name ain't Nespa. It's Harriet Higgins. 10,000 pounds. Oh, that's a lot of beer and skittles.
Well, suppose you get the car. I'll meet you in front of the building in 1 minute.
Righto, miss. Nespa. First it's Dr. Watson, and now it's a Hindu name. Oh, I suppose I'll be a Eskimo next.
KMPD calling car 18, car 18, at the intersection of 21st and Phoenix. Investigate wrecked automobile at the corner. Check it with your Tower Drive getaway car description. Car 18, the 21st and Phoenix.
I wonder.
Investigate wrecked auto. That is all. Kelly.
Hello? Yes, this is the lady in blue. You advise me not to take the case? How kind of you to be so concerned about my health. Really? How interesting. Oh, but I enjoy an occasional thrill. So sorry, I can't follow your advice.
Miss, it's gone.
What's wrong?
It ain't wrong. At least it might be, but even if it ain't, it's gone.
What on earth are you so excited about, Higgins?
Your machine, miss.
What's wrong with it?
I don't know, miss. But I do know it ain't where it should be if it wasn't gone.
You mean the car isn't there?
Yes, miss. No, it ain't there. Charlie, that's the garage man as works nights, except Tuesdays. He says a young fella from the repair shop came after it, and he had an order all written out in proper form, he did. Now, you didn't write none, did you, miss?
You know I didn't. And there's something you don't know, Watson.
I'm Higgins. What don't I know, miss?
We received a phone call advising us not to go to the Bachelor's Club and not to take the case.
Maybe it was a crook what called.
Or an accomplice.
Oh, hadn't we better stay here tonight, miss? seeing as how we was threatened.
If there's any real danger in the threat, we'll be safer out among other people than we would be alone here. And we'll learn a lot more. Call a taxi.
All right, if you insist.
I do.
KMPD calling all cars. Attention all cars and state patrol. Information on state, tri-state blockade. Plan 71 for Tower Drive.
Hello?
Getaway. The license
Hello.
Number is in
is
the 8th column.
Is this the taxi cab, Clyde?
6.
Oh.
Mary 5.
Well, send
eight,
the cab
two,
right
eight,
over now.
6. Mary 5.
Well, have I?
8-2-8.
Oh. The bloke
boys.
Wants to know where I
calling
am. I'm holding on to the other end of the wire talking to you, so where
call.
Could I be but here? Well, Lummy, why didn't you say that before? Now you send a cab for the lady in blue. I don't say put a man on the wire as can understand plain American.
Are they sending a cab?
Yes, miss. And they know where, right enough.
Then let's go. Our troubles are multiplying.
I beg pardon me? Multiplying?
Getting worse, Harriet. Didn't you hear the last police call while you were ensnaring the taxi?
I can't only hear but one thing at once, miss.
You should learn. It was unusually interesting. It gave the license number of the getaway car used in the Tower Drive robberies.
What's so strange about that?
It was my car.
Your car?
My car.
But I've been with you all evening, miss. You didn't do those robberies.
Thank you, Harriet. But the fact remains that my car was used in the robbery.
Oh, and won't Lieutenant Greer love that, huh? Oh, that'll be cabby now.
Turn off the radio. I'll tell him we're ready.
Yes, miss.
Well, if it ain't Little Blue Riding Hood. Going somewhere, sister?
Yes. Do you mind?
Get back in there.
Oh, I'm going to find
Shut up, you, and get back in that room.
I'm really very sorry, but Watson always faints at the sight of a gun.
A gun? A gun? Oh, blimey, I'm a goner now.
Hey, get that dame off of my feet. Hey!
I'm sorry to do this.
Watch me, Butch!
Hey, look out! What the...
Now lie there quietly while Watson ties you up. We'll be glad to drop you off at the nearest police station.
Say, what is this? That dame didn't faint.
You should think more quickly. She just dropped down where she could grab your ankles, and I pushed.
That's got the blighter. He won't break out of those wires.
Well done, my dear Watson. Let's be on our way.
If you're talking about number 12 Tower Drive, you'd be a smart girl to forget that date.
Harriet, do we ever forget our appointments?
The Lady in Blue, on Tuned to Yesterday, Episode 1, from April of 1951. Episode 2 coming up later in this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Now time for a broadcast of Dark Venture. If you were a Chicago radio listener at the time of this airing at 9:30 at night in December of 1946, you could have heard it on station WENR or tuned in to Dr. IQ on WMAQ or Boston Blackie on WGN. This episode called The Miser from the 9th of December 1946 on ABC.
Over the minds of mortal men come many shadows, shadows of greed and hate, jealousy and fear. Darkness is the absence of light. So in the sudden shadows which fog the minds of men and women, are to be found the strange impulses which urge them into the unknown. Dark Venture.
But, officer, she's dead. I tell you, she's dead.
Hey, relax.
She's dead. Miss
relax.
Parsons dead.
All right,
she's
you said that
dead.
20 times.
She's
Slow
dead.
Down.
She's
relax.
Dead.
Let me get some of this down. Say, her name is Parsons?
Emily Parsons, yeah.
Emily Parsons. What's the address?
875 Western Avenue.
Any further information?
Yeah. Yeah, plenty. After what I saw today, I couldn't keep it to myself.
Oh. You know who killed her?
Yes, officer. I killed her. Yeah. You heard right, officer. I killed her. You think that's such a terrible thing, huh? You didn't know Miss Parsons, did you? And you didn't know the spot I was in, biggest jam in my life. And you think she'd lift a finger to help me? No. Let me tell you how it was. I got this job about 4 months ago as a clerk at Charlie's Food Market. Nothing much, $30 a week, but it was a living. That first day, I reported at 7 o'clock in the morning, and Charlie, the owner, was there to start breaking me in. I remember one of the first things I did was pick through the fruits and vegetables, put all the stuff that was turning a little bad into a box. And then I asked Charlie if I should take it out and burn it in the incinerator.
Burn it? No, always save this stuff for Miss Parsons. She'll be in about half an hour.
But it ain't much good.
Well, she's not particular. I give it to her at a special price. Also, leftover pastry, anything like that.
Oh. One of those poor names, huh?
Poor? That's what you think. Old Lady Parsons worth $1 million.
$1 million? Yeah, that's the first time I ever heard of her. I wish it would have lasted. I wished I'd have dropped dead before I ever went to work at Charlie's. Anyhow, right at 7:30, like Charlie said, the front door opens, and the little old lady in a long black dress comes on.
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Miss Parsons.
Do you have something for me today?
Yep. Everything in this box. Also, this bag of noodles. The cellophane got ripped, but the noodles are okay.
Oh, that's fine. There's enough here to last me for a week. How much, Charlie?
Oh, make it 50 cents.
50 cents? But isn't that a little...
Okay, you give me what you think it's worth.
Well, I certainly don't think it's worth more than 30 cents.
Well, all right. I ain't gonna argue, Miss Parsons.
30 cents. Here you are.
Thanks.
Oh, well, the box is heavier than it looks.
Yeah, okay. Pete.
Yeah?
Miss Parsons only lives a couple of blocks away. Would you carry this home for her?
Sure, be glad to. Woman with $1 million eating a grocery store's leftovers? How do you like that? And she lived in an old shack that looked like if a guy sneezed, the whole thing would blow sky high. Inside it was dark and there was hardly any furniture. Also, it was cold.
Put the box down on the chair.
Okay. Say, it's none of my business, but it's pretty cold in here. Don't you have any heat?
Oh, yes, I have a gas heater. Now that I'm back from the store, I'll turn it on and light it. There. Now it'll warm up soon enough.
Yeah, but that isn't
Not much sense turning on the gas burner when I'm not in the house, is there?
Well,
that only runs up the gas bill, you know.
Well, just the same, I only wanted to tell
you... One sure way to hold on to your money is to be frugal in everything. And remember this, young man... When you got money, people respect you.
At first, I couldn't believe that anybody with $1 million or even a $1.55 would live like that. I started delivering her groceries regularly. And she showed me scrapbooks with articles about her father. Yeah, she must have had the dough all right. Her father was one of these financial wizards, and the last article, which told of his death in 1924, said he left an estate of $3 million. But a couple of weeks after I started working at Charlie's, I forgot about Miss Parsons, though, because I got a chance to latch onto a little bundle of my own. Yeah. It happened on Monday morning about 10 days ago. I'd opened the store like I usually do when I swept out the place, picked over the vegetables for Miss Parsons when the phone rang in the back. It was Charlie telling me he'd be in at 9:30 to pick up Saturday's receipts of $900 and make a bank deposit. Then, just as I hung up, I heard the front doorbell tinkle. Yeah, I'll be right with you. Good morning, sir. What can I do for you?
You can open a cash register and keep your mouth shut.
Hey, what are you doing with that gun?
Come on, open the register. Ain't got time to fool around.
Yeah, sure, okay. Look, mister, I'm a married man with 3 kids.
Come on. Hey, is this all you got? $14 and some change?
Well, yeah, you see, we just opened up.
All right. Now turn around and study that wall for a long time. And just keep remembering those three kids. As soon as he was out of the store, I looked into the cash register to make sure.
The dope? He hadn't paid any attention to the white envelope with Saturday's receipts in it. More than $900. I hurried to the phone to call Charlie. Ah, that Charlie sure was a lucky guy. Even when he got held up, the crook overlooks the big dough and takes only $14. How do you like that?
Hello?
Charlie, this is Pete. A guy just came in and held me up.
What?
Yeah, just a couple of minutes ago, but listen.
$900? Molly, we got held up for $900.
No, Charlie, listen.
Did you call the police?
No, I thought I'd call you first and tell you.
Call the police and then call the insurance company. It's a good thing I took out that insurance.
Charlie, would you listen to me? I only wanted to tell you
that... if it wasn't for that. They never catch guys who hold up grocery stores. Nobody will ever see that dough again.
But Charlie, don't listen.
Call the police right away. I'll be right down.
But Charlie, don't you understand? He didn't get the $900... Charlie?
Fine. Call the cops, he says. The dope, he never even gave me a chance to tell him.
Police department.
This is the assistant manager at Charlie's Market calling. I had just been held up.
What's the address?
1227 Harding Avenue.
All right, I'll get a squad car out there right away. How many men were there?
Oh, just one.
How much money did he get? Hello?
Yeah, I heard you. He got... $914. It was too easy to do anything else. I didn't have much time, so I hid the envelope with the $900 in a box of overripe vegetables I'd collected for Miss Parsons. The cops came within a few minutes, and Charlie was right on their heels. But they didn't bother me a bit. The first chance I got, I grabbed Miss Parsons' box of vegetables and started out for her place. But first, I went into a drugstore, took the envelope of money out of the grocery box, bought a stamp, wrote my address on the envelope, and dropped it in a mailbox on the corner. It was just as easy as that. Then I went up to Miss Parsons. But this time, she wasn't alone. There was an important-looking guy with a briefcase. And when I was coming in, he was just leaving.
All right, Miss Parsons. You should get the first check in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that'll be fine.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Morning, Miss Parsons.
That's Mr. Humphreys, my financial advisor, you know.
Oh?
You know, some of my government bonds have matured, and on the first of next month, the government will send you a check for $2,000. And that's only interest.
Yeah, swell. Here's your groceries, Miss Parsons.
You see what comes from investing your money wisely, Peter?
Oh, yeah. Of course, I don't have to worry about that. I'm always broke.
I thought I was making a big joke. But as things worked out, it didn't take me 3 days to blow every dime of that $900. A couple of poker games, a big night with a girlfriend, a visit to the neighborhood bookie, and I was right back where I started from. But if I thought that was tough, I found out how wrong I was. I was alone in the store yesterday morning when a stranger came in.
Hello. You're Peter Nolan, aren't you?
Yeah, but I don't think I know you.
My name's Duncan. I'm special investigator for the insurance company that paid your boss, Charlie, $900.
Oh, well.
Is Charlie around?
No. Charlie's home. He won't be in until this afternoon.
Oh. Well, Charlie's in for a surprise.
Surprise?
Yeah. The cops picked up the crook who robbed you a couple of weeks ago.
They did? They did, huh? Well, that's swell. Swell, yeah. It sure is a surprise.
Oh, but that's not the surprise I'm talking about.
No?
The real surprise is that this crook says he didn't take the $900.
Huh?
No, he only got $14 and some change, according to him.
According to him? Huh? That's a good one. That guy ought to write jokes for Bob Hope. Didn't get the $900. Huh? What does he think he's going to believe something like that?
I believe it.
Who?
I believe it. I've talked to so many of these guys, I can tell in 5 seconds whether they're lying or not.
Oh, but I...
This fellow's got no reason to lie. He's a 3-time loser. $14 or $900. Doesn't make any difference. He's through.
All right, then if he didn't take the dough, I'd like to know what happened to it. Maybe it melted away.
How much do you have left?
What are you talking about?
How much do you have left?
You saying I took it? I ought to bust you one for that.
Okay. What's Charlie's home phone number?
Sunset 32166. Go ahead, call him. Tell him what you told me. He'll laugh in your face. Go on.
Ah. You know, what you did wasn't so original. I run into it a dozen times a month.
Go ahead, go ahead. Call him. And later on today, I'm going to have my lawyer call you.
Yeah? Oh, hello, Mr. Harris.
Hey, wait a minute.
Holding the hook down won't help. As soon as I leave here, I'll call him again.
Give me a break, will you?
Just answer my question. How much of the 900 do you have left?
Nothing. Not a dime.
How much do you have in the bank?
A 50 buck Christmas fund.
How much can you raise between now and tomorrow?
Not 900 bucks.
Well, you're going to raise 900 bucks, or I'm telling Charlie and he'll throw you in jail.
No, listen.
You listen. I work for the insurance company, not for the police. It's my job to try and save us money, that's all. Now, if you happen to find an envelope with 900 bucks in it somewhere in this store between now and, say, 12 noon tomorrow, it's okay with me.
But I tell you, I can't.
And I tell you, you've got to.
After the insurance investigator left, I wanted to bat my head against the wall. Where was I going to get 900 bucks between now and tomorrow? No loan company would give me that kind of dough on my salary. I couldn't ask Charlie. And who?
Who?
I went around the store like a crazy guy, kicking things, smacking things. They kicked over the box of leftovers. Miss Parsons wouldn't like that. Kneeled down to pick the stuff up and it hit me all at once. Miss Parsons. Sure.
Come in.
Hi, Miss Parsons. I decided to save you a trip down to the store today.
Right.
Here, I'll put the box right here.
More cooking vegetables, eh?
Yep. I sneaked in some good spinach, too, but don't you tell Charlie.
Well, I don't think I should buy any of these, Peter. My doctor advised me to eat nothing but uncooked food for a few days.
Oh, well, you keep it for later. It's a gift from me to you.
Well, thank you.
You're quite welcome. Miss Parsons, it's none of my business, but you're pretty well fixed, aren't you?
Of course. Why do you ask?
Well, I remember last time I was here, you were saying something about getting some dividends from government bonds.
Yes. 2,000. As a matter of fact, I received my first check in this morning's mail.
And with all your other capital, well, it wouldn't hurt you much to...
Yes?
Miss Parsons, I'm in the worst jam of my life. If I don't get 900 bucks today, I don't know what I'm going to do.
And so you came to me for help.
You're the only person I know, and it would only be a loan. See, I'd pay you back with interest.
Well, I could give you the money as a gift and hardly notice that it was gone.
No. Just loan it to me. That's all I ask.
Well, you're a nice young man. You've been very good to me. If I gave you the money, I wouldn't think of taking it back.
Oh, gosh, Miss Parsons, I don't know what to say.
Yes, I could go to my bureau and give you the money out of my petty cash this very moment.
Miss Parsons?
But if I did, I would be doing you an injustice that I could never forgive myself for.
Miss Parsons, I... Huh?
Yes. The only thing that really counts in this world is independence. The ability to stand on your own two feet.
Oh, but listen to me,
My father used to drum that into my head again and again. Stand on your own two feet.
Yes, ma'am, I know that,
accept nothing from your neighbor but respect.
All right. Forget about the gift. Lend me the money. Strictly business proposition.
Well, my father had a lot to say about the institution of moneylenders, too. No, I'll never be a party to any such business.
But if you knew what a jam I was in...
Well, you'll find a way out.
There isn't any way out. Not if you won't help me.
Well, I'm sorry. I can't go against my principles.
Principles? Why, you old miser, what kind of principles have you got? Living like a dog in this shack, eating food we ought to throw in the incinerator? Too cheap to even turn on the gas heater and warm your house? Piling up your money for what? For what?
If you've quite finished, you may leave my house.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, it's a pleasure. But when I got out on the street, I didn't feel so tough anymore. Tomorrow at 12 o'clock, my whole life was going to be smashed to pieces. The only thing that could save me was 900 bucks, and here this old dame with so much dough, and she gives me a line about principles. I could go to my bureau and give you the money out of my petty cash. One of these nights, somebody was going to break into that shack of hers and dip their hands into that petty cash and... Hey. Yeah. No, no, that's crazy. I'd be the first one she'd suspect. She'd tell the cops about me asking her for dough, and then I'd... An old lady with nothing to live for but money? She wouldn't tell the cops if... She wouldn't tell the cops if she was dead. I left my room at 2:30 in the morning. I lived more than 2 miles from Miss Parsons' shack, but I was going to walk it. Nobody was going to see me. I'd taken a couple of shots of gin to kind of keep me going, and my mind was as clear as a bell. The old dame didn't have nothing in the world to live for, nothing but that dough. I kept saying that over and over and over again as I walked, like it was a line of a song. It was a little after 3:30 when I came to the street, and everything was all dark. I started getting the shakes when I went through the alley behind her shack, but just thinking of that insurance detective waiting to throw me in jail straightened me out. Now I was walking up to the back of the shack. The door was locked. Walked around to the bedroom window. Yeah, it was open a few inches. By the faint light of the moon, I could see that she was in bed. I started sliding the window open, but I kind of lost control of my nerves for a minute. I kind of got weak in the knees, and after a few deep breaths, I started raising the window again. Now I crawled over the ledge.
Easy.
I kicked over a chair.
Who's there?
She was reaching for a bed lamp. I couldn't have that. I rushed over to the bed.
No.
My fingers closed around her throat.
Oh, please.
And then I started to freeze up. All the strength drained out of me. It was such a terrible feeling, my fingers against her wrinkled throat.
No, please. Don't hurt me.
I had to kill her. But I couldn't. I had to. And I realized she'd gone limp. I thought for a moment maybe I'd killed her. But now she was breathing. She'd only fainted. Well, maybe that was all I needed. Maybe I didn't have to kill her after all. And then it hit me. Pete. She'd called my name. She'd seen me. Yeah, I did have to kill her. But how? I stumbled around the room looking for something, anything. I bumped into her gas heater in the dark, and I... Gas heater? Yeah. Yeah, I could kill her that way. Yeah, I started feeling all right again. But first, the money. I remember what you said about the petty cash being in her bureau. I went over to it, started opening and closing drawers. Where was it? I couldn't waste any more time. This tin can must be in here. Yep. Yeah, here's your money. Hey, this is only loose change, a dime and some pennies. It can't be. What's this? A check. A government check. I jammed it into my pocket. Looked through the rest of the drawers. There wasn't anything else. That was okay. $2,000 government check. I know a guy named Tom would take government checks for 50 cents on the dollar and no questions asked. I could get a grand out of it. Yeah, that's all I needed. Hey, Miss Parsons? She was acting like she might be coming out of it. I had to move fast. I went through the house making sure that the doors and windows were closed good. Then I ran over to the gas heater and opened it up full blast. After that, I went over to the windowsill and pulled the window down after me. I crouched outside the window watching. It was after 5 o'clock in the morning. The sky was starting to lighten up just a little. I crouched there until my wristwatch told me it was 6:10. Watching her through the window while the house filled with gas. And in all that time, she never moved once. I knew she'd never move again. Then I remembered. This was my morning to open the market. If I wasn't there at 6:30, I might have to answer questions. Okay, I could still make it all right. But first, I wanted to look at that check. I reached into my pocket, but before I could get it out, I saw the milk truck in the alley. How long had it been there? I hadn't even noticed it before. Then I saw the milkman coming out of one of the other yards. And, hey, he was coming right into Miss Parsons' backyard. I tried to jump to my feet, but I couldn't move. I crouched beside the window so long my legs had cramped up. What was I going to do? I pressed myself against the side of the shack. It was still pretty dark. Maybe he wouldn't see me. He was knocking on a door. If he should smell the gas, then...
Miss Parsons. Oh, Miss Parsons.
I felt my heart beating in my throat. All the time was getting lighter and lighter. Any second he might see me. Oh, he was going away. He hadn't seen me. I was okay. I waited until I saw him go into another yard. Then slowly I forced myself up. Pain shot up my legs till I saw stars, but I had to get out of here. I forced myself to limp along. And gradually the stiffness and pain left me. I got to the store at 25 to 7 and opened it up. There were no customers that early, and I was plenty glad. I looked like a wreck. If anyone saw me like this, they might remember it when they heard Miss Parsons had been killed. I went in the back of the store, washed up, put on a clean shirt, made myself some black coffee. And gradually, I began to feel like myself again. It was 7:45 already. Later on, when Charlie got here, I'd ask for a couple of hours off and go downtown and sell the check to that guy, Tom. Yeah, I was all right. I pulled a check out of my pocket. It was all wadded up. I started smoothing it out to get a good look at it when I heard the front doorbell tinkle. My first customer. So I jammed the check back into my pocket and started for the front of the store. Good morning. Anything I can...
Do you have something for me today, Pete?
No. It can't be you. It can't be.
Do you have something for me today, Pete?
No. You're dead. I killed you. You're dead. And that's the whole story, officer. I beat it out the back way when I saw her, and I ran all the way over to the station. But now I realize it was just my imagination seeing her like that. But you know, I'm still glad I told the truth.
So you murdered the old miser woman for a $2,000 government check?
I was in a spot. She wouldn't help me. It drove me nuts.
Yeah. Well, give me the check.
Sure. Here.
You never did finish smoothing it out, did you? Yeah, now you can look at it.
Yeah, I think this is the wrong check.
It's the only one she had, isn't it?
Yeah, but this is only for $37.
Look here at the bottom. Says what it's for, right on the corner.
Why, welfare, appropriation, old age Hey, what is this? She had millions. She wouldn't be taking an old age pension. Why, she even had a financial advisor, Humphreys.
Humphreys? He was a social worker assigned to the case. She was a pauper. Every cent her father had left her was lost in the last depression.
Hey, wait a minute. How do you know all this?
Because Miss Parsons was here 10 minutes ago and told me.
No, I tell you, she's dead. I turned on the gas heater. I watched her die. She's dead.
Gas heater? When she told you she was only eating raw foods, that should have tipped you off. Poor old dame. She was really broke, all right. Your turning on the heater didn't mean a thing. The gas company shut off her gas 3 days ago.
Minds of mortal men come many shadows. Shadows of greed and hate, jealousy and fear. Darkness is the absence of light. So in the sudden shadows which fog the minds of men and women are to be found the strange impulses which urge them on to their venture in the dark.
Dark Venture, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 9th of December, 1946, an ABC radio broadcast. And we wrap this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday with Episode 2 of The Lady in Blue Show, heard on New York City station WNBC, Saturday mornings at 8:30, from April to December of 1951.
Lady in Blue.
The Lady in Blue. Tonight we find mistress and maid in a taxi on their way to the Bachelor's Club, an exclusive and wealthy residential club where the Lady in Blue has been called to solve a daring robbery. A most interesting feature of the robbery is the fact that our heroine's stolen car was used by the criminals for their getaway.
I'll never forget Sergeant Donnelly's face when I reported that my car was stolen.
I don't blame him, miss. I'd be taken aback myself if I was a desk sergeant and a young lady, as was the best private detective in the business, came in and presented me with a bloke as was trying to stop her from taking a case and then told me a car was stolen and described the car as was used by the criminals in the case, even to the license number.
Involved, but true. I wonder what Lieutenant Greer will say when we appear.
Nummy, he won't like it, none, miss.
No, but there's not much he can do about it. We're almost there.
Do I do the usual, miss?
Yes, Harriet. Examine the apartment thoroughly while I interview Mr. Tremaine.
This Tremaine bloke, miss, of what sort is he?
Young and wealthy. Nothing to do but play, which he does gracefully enough. I've met him socially, of course, so he won't recognize me.
Blow me, but I don't like this. Someday you'll be recognized, miss.
I hardly think so. Well, here we are.
And too soon at that. I don't like this case, miss.
That's all, driver.
Thanks, lady.
What's wrong with this case, Harriet?
Well, looks to me like the blokes what's on it wanted to get you called in. Else, why was your car stolen and used to do the robbery? And why did they telephone and warn you not to take the case? Anyone who knows you knows that you'd sure take the case if you was warned not to do it.
Excellent reasoning, my dear Watson. Excellent.
Me name ain't Watson. It's Harriet Higgins, and you know it, miss.
All right, Higgins. Then you think that thug that we presented to Sergeant Donnelly was only meant to delay us?
I do.
So do I.
Oh, here comes Lieutenant Greer, miss.
So I see. Good evening, Lieutenant.
Well, well, well. If it isn't a sapphire siren and a girl Friday. Somehow I thought you might turn up, Miss Blue.
Glorious night, isn't it, Jerry?
Mind if I give you some advice?
If I don't like it, I'll send it back.
Look, Miss Blue. I represent the police department. I'm in charge of the Tremaine robbery. And you get in my head.
Such lovely curly hair, too.
What there is of it, miss?
Now, really, Harriet, there's plenty of it.
I ain't never seen it, miss.
That's because the lieutenant never takes off his hat.
Huh? Oh.
Thank you, Jerry, darling.
Oh, take it easy, Miss Blue. Now, look. The commissioner squawked because you beat us out in a random killer case.
And instructed you to keep me out of any big cases. Is that right, Lieutenant?
You got a license and a state permit as a private detective, Miss Blue. But that doesn't mean that you can meddle in any case that interests you. You leave police department work alone unless you're retained by the victim of a crime or one of the parties involved.
Would Tremaine do in this case?
Tremaine?
Yes, Tremaine. He phoned and invited me to join the fun. I was also warned by an anonymous telephone voice that my health would be better if I didn't take the case. And it might interest you to know that the getaway car you're looking for was stolen from me early this evening.
Did you report it?
Yes, Jerry, dear, about half an hour ago.
I don't suppose you know anything more about this case?
Oh, not much. She only delivered a blooming witness to the station for you.
A witness?
Well, a suspect, or at least an accomplice. A thug that paid us a call and advised us to forget the robbery at number 12 Tower Drive.
Blimey. But I'm thinking as how you better get to the station and talk to him before he forgets who his boss is, Lieutenant.
You may be right at that.
Let me know what he has to say, will you? By that time, I may be able to give you some more important information.
I can find my own information on this case, Miss Blue.
I may remind you of that, Lieutenant Greer. Come along, Higgins.
Very good, miss.
Poor Jerry. We shouldn't tease him so, Harriet.
No, I suppose not, miss.
He's a good detective, but he lets the commissioner worry him too much.
Oh, there's a man standing by the door, miss.
Yes, I see him. It's Tremaine.
Good evening. I'm Arnold Tremaine. You're the lady in blue, aren't you?
Oh, but of course you are.
Yes, Mr. Tremaine. And this is my assistant, Higgins.
Won't you come in?
Thank you. I'm sorry we took so long to get here, Mr. Tremaine, but we had little business to dispose of on the way. How many people knew of the robbery when you called me?
Only myself and Charlie Purcell. I had called the police, of course, but they hadn't arrived. Here's the elevator.
Thank you. Who's Charlie Purcell?
The chap that lives just below me. He was up for supper tonight.
Were you entertaining?
No, just Purcell and myself. Cold snack, you know, my man's night off.
Oh. Which floor are you on, Mr. Tremaine?
Penthouse, thank goodness. You know, you're the only attractive thing about this robbery.
Thank you. And for that, you may call me Miss Blue.
Thank you. Elevator stops here, Miss Blue. We have to walk up one flight to my room.
Is this the only way up to the roof, Mr. Tremaine?
Yes, it is.
Quite an isolated place for a jewel robbery.
There seems to be lots of people between hit and the exit, don't there, miss?
Not so many, when you consider the time of night.
I should think that once he'd gained the elevator, he probably wouldn't meet anyone who'd question him.
What do you think, Watson?
Mean I mind, Watson. It's Higgins, miss.
Well, Watson, you don't trip on the stoop, Miss Blue.
Oh, thank you.
Here we are. And again, the only entrance, Miss Blue.
Ooh, you really have a lovely place here, Mr. Tremaine. Mind if Higgins takes a look around?
Why, no, not at all.
All right, Watson. See what Jerry Greer left behind.
Very good, miss.
I suppose you'll want to look over the scene of the crime.
Not yet, Mr. Tremaine. Where were you when the robbery occurred?
In the dining room over there. My strong box was in my den, that is, right over here.
Just beyond the dining room door. Any other entrances to the den?
No, only through the dining room.
All right, let's have the whole story.
Well, I bought some stones at an auction this afternoon and put them in the strong box when I got back. That reminded me of Charlie Purcell, the chap below me. He'd expressed quite an interest in what he called my jewel collection, so I called him on the house phone and asked him up for a bit of something cold. Thought I'd show him the lot after supper. He's quite a collector, too, you know.
Where's the house phone?
Right in the den.
Then what did you do?
Rang for my man and told him to lay out a cold supper for us before he left. Then I wrote a few letters to the in the den until I heard a knock on the outside door. When my man didn't answer it, I concluded he'd gone out for the night and went myself. Found it was Purcell. We had a snack in the dining room, and then I brought him in here to show him the collection, and we found the strong box broken open and the jewelry gone.
Sounds conclusive and to the point. Where did you sit during dinner?
At the head of the table, right there, facing the door to the den.
Did you leave the dining room at all?
Only twice. Once during the dinner, I stepped into the kitchen to get the coffee, and then afterwards...
How long did you leave Purcell alone in here?
Well, just long enough to step into the kitchen, pick up the coffee pot, and come back. Purcell wouldn't have done it, and he wasn't alone in here over a minute anyway.
No, that's hardly time enough to break open a strong box and hide $50,000 worth of jewelry. What about the other time you left the dining room?
Purcell was with me. We took our dishes into the pantry and stacked them in the sink. Then we went right into the den and opened the closet. The strong box is in full view on the closet floor, and I saw right away that the lid was not tightly closed. I checked the shock system and found it still on, so I disconnected it and opened the box. It was empty.
The box was electrically protected?
Yes. To touch it without disconnecting the wires meant a paralyzing shock.
And it had been opened without disconnection?
It rather looks that way.
Yes. To the tune of $50,000 worth of precious stones.
Beg pardon.
What is it, Harriet?
There were three people as ate here tonight, miss. There's three sets of dishes in the sink.
Who was the third person, Mr. Tremaine?
Why, no one. Purcell and myself were the only ones.
Huh. You don't say. Then was it a ghost as dirtied one dish, one butter plate, one coffee cup and saucer with suitable accompanying in silver? Was it a ghost, I ask?
It might have been my man. He probably had a bite before he left and put his things in the sink.
Wouldn't you have noticed them when you and Purcell took your dishes into the kitchen after your supper?
Well, as a matter of fact, Miss Blue, I carried in the coffee urn and a few dishes which I handed to Purcell. He actually put them in the sink.
Oh, I see. Now let's get back to your story. What happened after you discovered your loss?
Purcell insisted that I search him, in spite of the fact that he hadn't had time to do the job. Then I called the police, and Purcell and I searched the place. Before the police arrived, well, just as we finished the search, we both heard an explosion.
What kind of a explosion?
Look here, are you conducting this investigation, or is Miss Blue?
You might like to know that Harriet Iggins is a sworn-in officer of the law, private detective and special assistant to the Lady in Blue. And I'm Harriet Iggins.
Iggins, that'll do.
All right, miss. But I still ain't believing that any gentleman's gentleman, as was any kind of a gentleman's gentleman, would leave his dishes in the sink when he was going out for the night. Leastwise.
You'll have to ask Purcell or my man about that tomorrow.
What happened when you heard the explosion, Mr. Tremaine?
Well, the explosion sounded as though it were directly below us, and Purcell's apartment is right under mine. We both ran downstairs to see what had happened.
And found that his safe had been blown open while he was up here with you, Nespar.
How did you know?
I knew there had been a second robbery in the building from the police radio, and guessed that the explosion meant a blown safe.
Yes. We rushed downstairs and found the night watchman opening Purcell's door with his pass key. It seems that he was at the other end of the hall when the explosion occurred and ran right to Charlie's door.
What did you see when you got in?
Purcell's wall safe had been blown open and was entirely empty. The windows were locked on the inside, and the watchman said that no one had come out of the apartment between the time he heard the explosion and put his key in the lock. He was standing in front of the door within 40 seconds after the explosion. Yet when we got in, there was no one there.
Sounds to me rather like black magic or ghosts. Except for one thing.
What's that, miss?
I know this building. The dumbwaiters run from the main kitchen on the ground floor up through Mr. Purcell's apartment and into the service pantry in this penthouse.
You don't think a thief hoisted himself up here in that traveling tea tray, do you?
To answer that question, I must ask you one, Mr. Tremaine. Will you describe as accurately as possible the sound of the explosion?
Well, it was muffled. Had a sort of shallow tone, rather a dull thud. It sounded just like that.
I think it was just like that.
Episode number 2 of the over 30 show run for The Lady in Blue, an NBC broadcast from April of 1951. Wrapping up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday, be with us again for more programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.